From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I believe the big disaster which prevented the occupation from being punished and repeating these crimes is the neglect and indifference by many of the institutions, especially American ones, which continue to defend the occupation.
As the Israeli military kills two more Palestinian journalists in Gaza, a new documentary by Zatteo has uncovered critical details about Israel's killing 3 years ago this week of the acclaimed Palestinian-American Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. The film identifies for the first time the Israeli soldier who allegedly shot Shireen. We'll speak to four guests, including Shireen's brother and niece, as well as the Zatteo founder Mehdi Hassan and the filmmaker Diane Nissenbaum, a former foreign correspondent at the Wall Street Journal. Then to Memphis, where juries acquitted three former Memphis police officers in the 2023 killing of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black father who died after the officers brutally beat him during a traffic stop driving home from work.
Mr. Bean, Mr. Haley, and Mr. Smith, a jury of your peers have found you not guilty on all charges with these matters. The court will enter the judgment sheets accordingly. This will conclude your matter that's before the court. Good luck.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip have killed at least 100 people over the past 24 hours as bombs, missiles and drones struck homes, businesses, apartment buildings, tents housing displaced Palestinians. In one of the latest attacks, Israel bombed a crowded restaurant and marketplace in Gaza City, killing at least 32 people and wounding 86 others. Witnesses said the strike littered the ground with body parts and blood. One survivor fled, clutching a baby with another two terrified children in tow.
What happened?
While we were at the hall of the restaurant, the Israeli army did a strike and everyone died. The youth died. I can't tell you. Youth at the entrance of the hall, blood was like a lake. Oh my, pools of blood.
Among the dead was Palestinian journalist Yahya Sabaya, who was killed just hours after celebrating the birth of his daughter. Palestinian officials say he's the 214th media worker killed in Gaza since October 2023. Another journalist, Nour al-Din Abdo, was killed in a separate Israeli attack. Israel's unrelenting assault on Gaza came as its total blockade entered its third month. The World Central Kitchen charity said Wednesday it had halted Gaza relief efforts after running out of supplies. Gaza's government media office reports more than 3,500 young children face imminent death from starvation. Another 70,000 children are being hospitalized for severe malnutrition. And 1.1 million Palestinian children lack the minimum nutritional requirements for survival. On Wednesday, more than 20 United Nations experts demanded action by states to avert what they call the annihilation of the Palestinian population. They write, quote, "Continuing to support Israel materially or politically, especially via arms transfers, risks complicity in genocide and other serious international crimes," unquote. In related news, a new report finds UK firms have continued to export military supplies, including munitions, to Israel, despite the government's suspension of arms export licenses to Israel in September. Meanwhile, Reuters reports Trump officials and their Israeli counterparts have discussed the possibility of the U.S. leading a temporary post-war administration of Gaza. In the occupied West Bank, Israel's continuing its illegal forced displacement of Palestinian communities in the Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp. Last week, Israeli officials announced plans to demolish another 100 Palestinian homes. This is Imam Pathi Haikal, a resident of Nur Shams.
What do they think we are to move us to caravans? This will never happen. Even if they build castles for us, we will not accept. Let them demolish half of the house and give me the other half. I would rather live in a room than in a castle outside a refugee camp. This camp is our life.
Israeli forces also demolished homes and other structures in Masafer Yatta this week. The Israeli military has forcibly displaced tens of thousands of West Bank Palestinians this year. Meanwhile, a new documentary by Zatteo has exposed new details about the killing of the Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akla, fatally shot 3 years ago this week in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. For the first time, Zatteo has identified Shireen's killer to be an Israeli soldier named Captain Alon Skagio. We'll have more on this story after headlines with an exclusive interview with the founder of Zatteo, the filmmaker, and Shireen Abu Akla's brother and niece. India and Pakistan are exchanging heavy artillery fire for a second straight day along the line of control that divides Indian and Pakistan-administered Kashmir. Pakistan's military says Indian airstrikes and shells have killed 31 people and injured 57 others on its side of the Kashmiri border in Pakistan's Punjab province. Among the dead were three people killed when India bombed a mosque in the Kashmiri city of Muzaffarabad. The principal of a nearby school said the attack sparked fear among students.
There has been significant damage here, as you can see. The school was also badly hit. The mosque is in a terrible state, and the mosque caretaker was martyred. The children are in fear. The school's condition is such that the ceiling has collapsed, the windows are shattered, and the doors and furniture have all been badly damaged.
Meanwhile, India says Pakistani artillery fire has killed at least 13 civilians, including five children. Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif promised to retaliate against India in a national address Wednesday, saying, quote, "We'll avenge the blood of our innocent martyrs," unquote. In Germany, Friedrich Merz was elected as chancellor Tuesday in a second round of parliamentary voting just hours after he failed to clinch the ballot in the first round, a first in post-war Germany. The new government announced Wednesday Germany will start rejecting undocumented migrants at its border and plans to deploy thousands more police to crack down on arrivals. The move undoes a 2015 order by then-Chancellor Angela Merkel, whose leadership was defined in large part by her welcoming of hundreds of thousands of asylum seekers, many of them who had fled war in Syria. In the United States, a federal judge on Wednesday warned a Trump administration plan to send undocumented immigrants to Libya would violate a court order issued in March. Lawyers for immigrants from Laos, Vietnam and the Philippines believe a North Africa-bound deportation flight could take off as early as this week. But Libya's two rival governments have denied any such agreement with the U.S., calling the potential move a violation of Libya's sovereignty. Libya has a track record of gross human rights violations in its treatment of refugees and immigrants. The U.N. has reported, quote, widespread practices of arbitrary detention, torture, rape and slavery. Agents with the Department of Homeland Security swept out across Washington, D.C. Tuesday and Wednesday, serving restaurant owners with notices demanding I-9 employment eligibility verification forms. This follows President Trump's recent executive order to intensify immigration enforcement in D.C. ICE said it served over 100 local businesses with notices. Among those raided was Chef Jeff's, a restaurant owned by the husband of CBS News anchor Nora O'Donnell, a correspondent for 60 Minutes. Trump has targeted CBS over what he considers unfavorable coverage. In North Carolina, a Republican candidate for the state Supreme Court has conceded the election more than 6 months after he lost to Democratic incumbent Allison Riggs. Jefferson Griffin finally conceded 2 days after a federal judge ordered the state's Board of Elections to certify Riggs' victory, ruling against Griffin's attempt to disqualify tens of thousands of ballots. North Carolina's Supreme Court will retain its current 5-2 Republican majority. A federal judge has struck down Trump's executive order seeking to bar lawyers from the firm Perkins Coie from accessing government buildings and threatening to cancel federal contracts of its clients. Judge Beryl Howell found the president's attack on Perkins Coie over its DEI policies and its work on Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign violates First Amendment protections. The Justice Department could still appeal Howell's ruling. Staff at the Voice of America Network are expressing alarm after presidential adviser Carrie Lake announced the beleaguered media outlet will start carrying content provided by the far-right Trump-allied One America News Network. OAN has spread conspiracy theories about election fraud in 2020 and COVID, among other things. VOA was forced to stop broadcasting, and over 1,000 staffers are still on forced administrative leave amid pending legal challenges to Trump's order to dismantle the outlet. VOA reporters involved in the case against the Trump administration responded to the latest news, quote, Congress mandated VOA to report reliable and authoritative news, not to outsource its journalism to outlets aligned with the president's agenda. Ukraine has accused Russia of violating a unilaterally declared ceasefire just hours after Russian President Vladimir Putin said his forces would pause attacks for 3 days. Russian warplanes reportedly fired 2 guided bombs on Ukraine's Sumy region. Besides that attack, there were no other reports of Russian incursions. This follows another wave of Ukrainian drone attacks that forced the closure of more than a dozen Russian airports, including 4 in Moscow, where 29 leaders, including China's Xi Jinping, are gathering for a World War II Victory Day parade. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he has no plans to abide by Russia's truce, but repeated his offer for a formal 30-day ceasefire. This week, Trump's envoy to Ukraine, Keith Kellogg, said President Putin's unlikely to accept a ceasefire plan unless it requires Ukraine to withdraw from the Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson regions.
If you do a ceasefire in place, the ground that you own, the ground that you fought for, that's your ground right now. What happens 5 or 10 years down the line is different.
And you don't have to basically freeze everything in place.
Right. And we've got that right now. The Ukrainians are willing to do a freeze in place, what I call a ceasefire in place. Mm-hmm. And then we'll, for a period of time, they're willing to set up a demilitarized zone. What they basically said is we'll back up 15 kilometers, you back up 15 kilometers to the Russians. So you know, I guess it's 30-kilometer, 18-mile zone that you can actually observe.
In Tennessee, jurors acquitted 3 former Memphis police officers of the 2023 murder of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black father who died after the officers brutally beat him during a traffic stop. The lawyers representing the Nichols family called the verdicts, quote, a devastating miscarriage of justice, unquote. To Darius Bean, Demetrius Haley, and Justin Smith, along with 2 other officers, are awaiting sentencing on separate federal charges. Those 2 other officers, Desmond Mills Jr. and Emmett Martin, are pleading guilty to the state charges and will not stand trial. We'll have more in this case later in the broadcast. Here in New York, police arrested at least 79 protesters at Columbia University Wednesday after they occupied the campus's main library to demand their school divest from Israel. The Columbia-Palestine Solidarity Coalition says multiple students were hospitalized by public safety officers. At least one protester was carried away on a stretcher. Columbia's acting president, Claire Shipman, said in a statement, quote, Columbia strongly condemns violence on our campus, anti-Semitism, and all forms of hate and discrimination, some of which we witnessed today, unquote. The protest came a day after a group of Jewish peace activists from Columbia traveled to Washington, D.C. to lobby Congress members and to condemn what they call the weaponization of accusations of anti-Semitism to silence critics of Israel's occupation of Palestine and its assault on Gaza. This is Columbia graduate student Carly Schaefer.
Columbia University has decided who is Jewish, who is not Jewish, and then from there, who is worthy of protection, who is not worthy of protection. And while we as Jewish students are fully, you know, transparent and honest as the repression and harm we have faced as Jewish students is not anything near what our Palestinian peers have faced, we are here directly to talk about this issue of weaponizing anti-Semitism to harm anybody and anyone, because it's all interconnected. I mean, look at the abduction of Mahmoud Khalil, look at the abduction of Mohsen. When you're using anti-Semitism as a weapon.
On Wednesday, Jewish students blasted a congressional hearing in which House Republicans continued to conflate anti-Israel, anti-Zionist protests with anti-Semitism. Jewish Voice for Peace Action called the House session a kangaroo hearing. Meanwhile, a federal appeals court on Wednesday ordered the Trump administration to transfer the abducted Tufts scholar Rumeysa Ozturk from an ICE detention jail in Louisiana to Vermont, as a judge continues to consider her release on bail. Rumeysa Ozturk, a Turkish citizen, was arrested for co-writing a student op-ed on Tufts' response to Gaza solidarity protests. She's a Fulbright scholar and graduate student at Tufts. Students at four California state universities, Long Beach, San Jose State, Sacramento State, and San Francisco State have launched a joint hunger strike to protest Israel's starvation campaign against Palestinians in Gaza. The students are demanding, quote, full divestment from companies complicit in genocide, an end to CSU ties with Israeli institutions, and protection of free speech on campus, unquote. Meanwhile, in the Netherlands, students have set up an encampment at Utrecht University to demand the school divest from Israeli institutions. They've named their encampment after slain Palestinian journalist Hossam Shabat. And at the Vatican, black smoke rose from a chimney at the Sistine Chapel earlier today as cardinals convened for a second day of secretive conclave deliberations to select a new pope. Tens of thousands of the faithful have been gathering in St. Peter's Square as they await the sight of white smoke, the signal that a new leader of the Roman Catholic Church has been elected. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, who killed Shireen? A new documentary uncovers the hidden identity of the Israeli soldier who fatally shot the acclaimed Palestinian-American Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. She was killed May 11th, 2022, 3 years ago this week. Stay with us. Malian musician Kyra Arbi, Nightingale of the North. She was performing in our Democracy Now! Studio in 2012. She died in 2018. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. We begin today's show looking at Israel's ongoing targeting of Palestinian journalists. A recent report by the Costs of War Project at Brown University described the war in Gaza as the, quote, worst ever conflict for reporters in history. By one count, Israel has killed 214 Palestinian journalists in Gaza over the past 18 months, including two journalists killed on Wednesday, Yahya Sabi and Nur al-Din Abdo. Yahya Sabi died just hours after his wife gave birth to their first child. Meanwhile, new details have emerged about the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, the renowned Palestinian-American Al Jazeera journalist who was fatally shot by an Israeli soldier 3 years ago on May 11, 2022. She was killed while covering an Israeli army assault on the Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank. Shireen and another reporter were against a stone wall wearing blue helmets and blue flak jackets clearly emblazoned with the word press. Shireen was shot in the head. Shireen was known throughout the Arab world for her decades of tireless reporting on Palestine.
Israel initially claimed she'd been shot by Palestinian militants, but later acknowledged she was most likely shot by an Israeli soldier. But Israel has never identified the soldier who fired the fatal shot or allowed the soldier to be questioned by U.S. investigators. But a new documentary just released by Zateo has identified and named the Israeli soldier for the first time. This is the trailer to the documentary, Who Killed Shireen?
That soldier looked down his scope and could see the blue vest and that it said press.
That's my belief, yes.
U.S. personnel have
never had access to those who are believed to have committed those shootings.
No one has been held to account. Justice has not been served.
She is the first American Palestinian journalist who has been killed by Israeli forces.
I want to know, who killed Shireen?
How are we going to find the shooter?
He's got a phone call set up with this Israeli soldier who was there that day.
We just have to go over to Israel.
Did you ever talk to the guy who fired the shots?
Korolev, I'm in prison. The U.S. should have absolutely come forward and actually pressed the fact that an American citizen was killed intentionally by IDF.
The drones are still ongoing. The explosion's going off.
Holy, we got a name.
But here's the twist.
The trailer for the new Zatteo documentary, Who Killed Shireen? The film identifies the Israeli soldier who allegedly killed Shireen Abu Akleh as Alon Skagio, who would later be killed during an Israeli military operation last June in Jenin, the same city where Shireen was fatally shot.
We're joined right now by four guests, including two members of Shireen Abu Akleh's family, her brother Anton, or Tony, and her niece, Lena. They're both in North Bergen, New Jersey. We're also joined by Mehdi Hassan, the founder and editor-in-chief of Zatteo, and by Diane Nissenbaum, the executive producer of Who Killed Shireen, the correspondent on the documentary, longtime Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent based in Jerusalem and other cities, a former foreign correspondent. He was twice nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Diane, we're going to begin with you. This is the third anniversary, May 11th exactly, of the death of Shireen Abu Akleh. Talk about your revelation, what you exposed in this documentary.
Well, there are two things that were very important for the documentary. The first thing was we wanted to find the soldier who killed Shireen. It had been one of the most closely guarded secrets in Israel. U.S. officials said that if they wanted to determine if there was a crime here, if there was a human rights violation, they needed to talk to this soldier to find out what he was thinking when he shot her. And we set out to find him, and we did. We did what the U.S. government never did, and it turned out he had been killed. So we were never able to answer that question, what he was thinking. But the other revelation that I think is as significant in this documentary is that the initial U.S. assessment of her shooting was that that soldier intentionally shot her and that he could tell that she was wearing a blue flak jacket with press across it. That assessment was essentially overruled by the Biden administration, which came out and said exactly the opposite. That's a fairly startling revelation that the Biden administration and the Israeli government essentially were doing everything they could to cover up what happened that day to Shireen Abu Akleh.
Well, let's go to a clip from the documentary Who Killed Shireen, in which Diane Nissenbaum, our guest, speaks with former State Department official Andrew Miller. He was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Israeli-Palestinian Affairs in 2022 when Shireen was killed.
It's nearly 100% certain that an Israeli soldier, likely a sniper, fired the shot that killed or the shots that killed Shireen Abu Akleh. Based on all the information we have, it is not credible to suggest that there were targets either in front of or behind Shireen Abu Akleh. The fact that the official Israeli position remains that this was a case of crossfire, the entire episode was a mistake, as opposed to potentially a mistake in identification or the deliberate targeting of this individual, points to I think, a broader policy of seeking to manage the narrative.
And did these Israelis ever make the soldier available to the U.S. to talk about it?
No. And the Israelis were not willing to present the person for even informal questioning.
That was State Department official, former State Department official Andrew Miller, speaking in the Zatteo documentary, Who Killed Shireen? He was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Israeli-Palestinian Affairs in 2022 when Shireen was killed. I want to go to Shireen's family, whom we have as guests, Anton Abu Akleh and Lina, who are joining us from New Jersey. You both watched the film for the first time last night when it premiered here in New York City. Lina, if you could begin by responding to the revelations in the film.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having us. Honestly, we always welcome and we appreciate journalists who try to uncover the killing of Shireen, but also who shed light on her legacy. And the documentary that was released by Zatteo and by Dion, it really revealed findings that we didn't know before, but we've always known that it was an Israeli soldier who killed Shireen. And we know how the U.S. administration failed our family, failed the U.S. citizen, and failed the journalist, really. And that should be a scandal in and of itself. But most importantly, for us as a family, it's not just about one soldier. It's about the entire chain of command. It's not just the person who pulled the trigger, but who ordered the killing, and the military commanders, the elected officials. So really, it's the entire chain of commands that needs to be held to account for the killing of a journalist who was in clear press vest, press gear, marked as a journalist.
And Anton, if you could respond, Shireen, of course, was your younger sister. What was your response watching the documentary last night?
It's very painful to look at all these scenes again, but I really extend my appreciation to Zatteo and all those who supported and worked on this documentary, which was very revealing. Many things we didn't know. The cover-up by the Biden administration, this thing was new to us. He promised. First statements came out from the White House and from the State Department, stressed on the importance of holding those responsible accountable. And apparently, in one of the interviews held in this documentary, President Biden never raised this issue with Bennett, at that time the prime minister. So that's shocking to us to know. It was a total cover-up, contradictory to what they promised us. And that's, like Lina just said, it's a betrayal not only to the family, not only to Shireen, but the whole American nation.
Mehdi Hassan, you've backed this documentary. It's the first big documentary Zatteo is putting out. It's also the first anniversary of the founding of Zatteo. Can you talk about the proof that you feel is here in the documentary that Alon Scaggio, and explain who he is and the unit he was a part of. Diane, it's quite something when you go to his grave, but how you can absolutely be sure this is the man.
So, Amy, Nermeen, thanks for having us here. I've been on this show many times, and I just want to say, great to be here on set with both of you. Thank you for what you do. This is actually our second documentary, but it is our biggest so far, because the revelations in this film that Dion and the team put out are huge in many ways. Identifying the soldier, as you mentioned, Alon Scaggio, identifying the Biden cover-up, which we just heard Tony Abuakleh point out. People didn't realize just how big that cover-up was. Remember, Joe Biden was the man who said, if you harm an American, we will respond. And what is very clear in the case of Shireen Abu Akleh, an American citizen who spent a lot of her life in New Jersey, they did not respond. In terms of the soldier itself, when Dion came to me and said, we want to make this film, it'll be almost like a true crime documentary. We're going to go out and find out who did it, because everyone followed the story. You guys covered it in 2022. It was a huge story in the world. But 3 years later, to not even know the name of the shooter, and I was well, will we be able to find this out? It's one of Israel's most closely guarded secrets. And yet, Dan and his team were able to do the reporting that got inside of Duv Devan, this elite special forces unit in Israel. It literally means the cherry on top. That's how proud they are of their eliteness. And yet, no matter how elite you are, Israel's way of fighting wars means you kill innocent people. And what comes out in the film from interviews, not just with a soldier, an Israeli soldier who speaks in the film and talks about how, hey, if you see a camera, you take the shot. But also speaking to Chris Van Hollen, United States Senator from Maryland, who's been one of the few Democratic voices critical of Biden in the Senate, who says there's going to be no change in Israel's rules of engagement over the years. And therefore, it was so important on multiple levels to do this film, to identify the shooter, because, of course, as you pointed out in your news headlines, Amy, they just killed 100 Palestinians yesterday. So this is not some old story from history where this happened in 2022 and we're going back to this. Everything that happened since, you could argue, flows from that. The Americans who've been killed, the journalists who've been killed in Gaza, Palestinians, the sense of impunity that Israel has and Israel's soldiers have. There are reports that Israeli soldiers are saying to Palestinians, hey, Trump has our back. Hey, the US government has our back. And it wasn't just Trump. It was Joe Biden, too. And that was why it was so important to make this film, to identify the shooter, to call out Israel's practices when it comes to journalists, and to call out the US role.
I just want to go to Diane. For people who aren't familiar with the progression of what the Biden administration said, the serious cover up, not only by Israel, but of its main military weapons supplier and supporter of its war on Gaza. And that is Joe Biden. From the beginning, first Israel said it was a Palestinian militant. At that point, what did President Biden say?
So at the very beginning, they said that they wanted the shooter to be prosecuted. They used that word at the State Department and said, this person who killed an American journalist should be prosecuted. But when it started to become clear that it was probably an Israeli soldier, their tone shifted and it became talking about vague calls for accountability or changes to the rules of engagement, which never actually happened. So you got to a point where the Israeli government admitted it was likely them. The U.S. government called for them to change the rules of engagement, and the Israeli government said no. And we have this interview in the film with Senator Chris Van Hollen, who says that essentially Israel was giving the middle finger to the U.S. government on this. And we have seen since that time more Americans being killed in the West Bank, dozens and dozens and dozens of journalists being killed with no accountability. And we would like to see that change. This is a trajectory that you're seeing. You know, the blue vest no longer provides any protection for journalists in Israel. The Israeli military itself has said that wearing a blue vest with press on it does not necessarily mean that you are a journalist. They are saying that terrorists wear blue vests too. So if you are a journalist operating in the West Bank now, you have to assume that the Israeli military could target you.
Well, let's go to another clip from the film Who Killed Shirin, which features Ali Samoudi, Shirin Abu Akleh's producer, who was with Shirin when she was killed and was himself shot and injured. In the clip, he speaks to the journalist Fatma Abdul Karim.
We are set up here now, even though we were supposed to meet at the location where you got injured and Shirin got killed.
We are 5 minutes from the location in Maidan al-Awda, but you could lose your soul in the 5 minutes it would take us to reach it. You could be hit by army bullets. They could arrest you. So it is essentially impossible to get there. I believe the big disaster which prevented the occupation from being punished and repeating these crimes is the neglect and indifference by many of the institutions, especially American ones, which continue to defend the occupation.
We're now approaching the third anniversary of Shirin's death. How did that affect you?
During that period, the occupation was making preparations for a dangerous scenario in the Jenin refugee camp. And for this reason, they didn't want witnesses. They opened fire on us in order to terrorize us enough that we wouldn't go back to the camp. And in that sense, they partially succeeded. Since then, we have been overcome by fear. From the moment Shireen was killed, I said and continued to say and will continue to say that this bullet was meant to prevent the Palestinian media from the documentation and exposure of the occupation's crimes.
That was Ali Samoudi, Shireen Abu Akleh's producer, who was with Shireen when she was killed and was himself shot and injured. We should note Ali Samoudi was just detained by Israeli forces in late April. The Palestinian journalist Mariam Barghouti recently wrote, Ali Samoudi was beaten so bad by Israeli soldiers, he was immediately hospitalized. This man has been one of the few journalists that continues reporting on Israeli military abuses north of the West Bank, despite the continued risk on his life, Mariam Barghouti wrote. The Committee to Protect Journalists spoke to the journalist's son, Mohammed Al-Samoudi, who told CPG, quote, my father suffers from several illnesses, including diabetes, high blood pressure, and a stomach ulcer. He needs a diabetes injection every 2 days and a specific diet. It appears he was subjected to assault and medical neglect at the interrogation center. Our lawyer told us he was transferred to an Israeli hospital after a major setback in his health. We don't know where he is being held, interrogated, or even the hospital to which he was taken. My father has been forcibly disappeared, he said. So, Dion Nissenbaum, if you could give us the latest. You spoke to Ali Samoudi for the documentary, and now he's been detained.
Yeah, his words were prophetic, right? He talks about this was an attempt to silence journalists, and my colleague Fatima says the same thing, that these are ongoing progressive efforts to silence Palestinian journalists. And we don't know where Ali is. He has not actually been charged with anything yet. He is one of the most respected journalists in the West Bank, and we are just seeing this progression going on.
So he, the latest we know is he was supposed to have a hearing, and that hearing has now been delayed to May 13th. Ali Samoudi?
That's right. And he has yet to be charged. So
I want to go back to Linu Abu Akleh, who's in New Jersey, where Shireen grew up. Lena, you were listed on Time Magazine's 100 Emerging Leaders for publicly demanding scrutiny of Israel's treatment of Palestinians. The horror and our condolences on the death of your aunt, on the killing of your aunt, and also to Anton, Shireen's brother. Lena, you've also, of course, spoken to Ali Samoudi. This continues now. He's in detention. His son says just disappeared. What are you demanding right now? We have a new administration. We've moved from the Biden administration to the Trump administration. And are you in touch with them? Are they speaking to you?
Well, our demands haven't changed. From day one, we're calling for the U.S. administration to complete its investigation, or for the FBI to continue its investigation and to finally release, to finally hold someone to account. And we have enough evidence that could have been that the administration could have used to expedite this case. But unfortunately, this new administration as well, no one has spoken to us. We haven't been in touch with anyone. And it's just been radio silence since. For us, as I said, our demands have never changed. It's been always to hold the entire system to account, the entire chain of command, the military, for the killing of an American citizen, a journalist, Palestinian-American journalist. As we've been talking, targeting journalists isn't happening just by shooting at them or killing them. There's so many different forms of targeting journalists, especially in Gaza and the West Bank and Jerusalem. So for us, it's really important as a family that we don't see other families experience what we are going through for impunity, for Israel's impunity to end, because at the end of the day, accountability is the only way to put an end to this impunity.
I am horrified to ask this question to Shireen's family members, to Lena, to Tony, Shireen's brother. But the revelation in the film, we were all there last night at its premiere in New York, that the Israeli soldiers are using a photograph of Shireen's face for target practice. Tony Abu Akleh, if you could respond.
You know, there is no words to describe our sorrow and pain hearing this. But, you know, I would just want to know why. Why would they do thing? What did Shireen do to them for them to use her as a target practice? You know, this is absolutely barbaric act, unjustified. And we really hope that this U.S. administration will be able to put an end to all this impunity they are enjoying. If they didn't enjoy this all this impunity, they wouldn't have been doing this. Practicing on a journalist? Why? You know, you can't practice on anything, but on a journalist? This shows that this targeting of more journalists, whether in Gaza and Palestine, it's systematic. It's been planned for, and they've been targeting and shutting off those voices, those reports, from reaching anywhere in the world.
And Anton, if you could say, you know, you mentioned last night as well, Shireen was in fact extremely cautious as a journalist. If you could elaborate on that, what precisely?
Absolutely. Shireen was very careful. Every time she's in the field, she would take her time to put on the gear, the required helmet, the vest with press written on it, before going there. She also tried to identify herself as a journalist, whether to the Israelis or to the Palestinians, so she's not attacked. And she always went by the book, followed the rules, how to act, how to be careful, how to speak to those people involved, so she can protect herself. But unfortunately, this soldier, as stated in the documentary, targeted Shireen just because she's Shireen and she's a journalist. That's it. There is no other explanation. 16 bullets were fired on Shireen. Not even her helmet nor the vest she was wearing were able to protect her, unfortunately.
Mehdi Hassan, you wanted to respond.
So Tony asks, why? Why would you do this? Why would you target not just a journalist in the field, but then use her face for target practice, as Dion and his team reveal in the film? And there is, unfortunately, a very simple answer to that question, which is that the Israeli military, and not just the Israeli military, but many people in our world today have dehumanized Palestinians. It is the removal of humanity from the people you are oppressing, occupying, subjugating, and killing. It doesn't matter if you're an American citizen. It doesn't matter if you have a press jacket on. It only matters that you are Palestinian in the sniper sights. And that is how they have managed to pull off the killing of so many journalists, so many children. The first documentary we commissioned last year was called Israel's Real Extremism. And it was about the Israeli soldiers who go into Gaza and make TikTok videos wearing Palestinian women's underwear, playing with Palestinian children's toys. It is the ultimate form of dehumanization, the idea that these people don't count, their lives have no value. And what's so tragic and shocking, and the film exposes this, is that Joe Biden, forget the Israeli military, Joe Biden also joined in that dehumanization. Do you remember at the start of this conflict, when he comes out and he says, well, I'm not sure I believe the Palestinian death toll numbers. When he puts out a statement at the 100 days after October 7th and doesn't mention Palestinian casualties. And that has been the fundamental problem. This was the great comforter-in-chief. Joe Biden was supposed to be the empath. And yet, as Tony points out, what was so shocking in the film is he didn't even raise Shireen's case with Naftali Bennett, the Prime Minister of Israel at the time. Again, would he have done that if it was an American journalist in Moscow? We know that's not the case. We know when American journalists, especially white American journalists, are taken elsewhere in the world, the government gives a damn. And yet, in the case of Shireen, the only explanation is because she was a Palestinian-American journalist.
You know, in the United States, the U.S. government is responsible for American citizens, which Biden pointed out at the beginning when he thought it was a Palestinian militant who had killed her. But, Lena, you yourself are a journalist, and I'm thinking, I want to hear your response to using her face, because, of course, that is not just the face of Shireen, but I think it's the face of journalism. And it's not just American journalism, of course. I mean, in fact, she's known to hundreds of millions of people around the world as the face and voice of Al Jazeera Arabic. She spoke in Arabic. She was known as that to the rest of the world. But to see that and that revealed in this documentary.
Yeah, it was horrifying, actually, and it's it just goes on to show how the Israeli military is built. It's barbarism, it's the character of revenge, of hate, and that is part of the entire system. And as Mehdi and as my father just mentioned, this is all about dehumanizing Palestinians, regardless if they're journalists, if they're doctors, they're officials. For them, they simply don't care about Palestinian lives. And for us, Shireen will always be the voice of Palestine. And she continues to be remembered for the legacy that she left behind. And she continues to live through so many journalists who have picked up the microphone, who have picked up the camera just because of Shireen. So regardless of how the Israeli military continues to dehumanize journalists and how the U.S. fails to protect Palestinian-American journalists, we will continue to push forward to continue to highlight the life and the legacy that Shireen left behind.
Well, let's turn to Shireen Abu Akleh in her own words. This is an excerpt from the Al Jazeera English documentary, The Killing of Shireen Abu Akleh.
Sometimes the Israeli army doesn't want you there, so they target you, even if they later say it was an accident. They might say, we saw some young men around you. So they target you on purpose, as a way of scaring you off, because they don't want you there.
So that was Shireen in her own words in an Al Jazeera documentary. So, Lina, I know you have to go soon, but if you could just tell us, what do you want people to know about Shireen as an aunt, a sister, and a journalist?
Yes, so we know Shireen as the journalist, but behind the camera, she was one of the most empathetic people. She was very sincere, and something not a lot of people know, but she was a very funny person. She had a very unique sense of humor that she lit up every room she entered. She cared about everyone and anyone. She enjoyed life. Shireen, at the end of the day, loved life. She had plans, she had dreams that she still wanted to achieve, but her life was cut short by that small bullet which changed our lives entirely. But at the end of the day, Shireen was a professional journalist who always advocated for truth, for justice, and at the end of the day, all she wanted to do was humanize Palestinians and talk about the struggles of living under occupation. But at the same time, she wanted to celebrate their achievements. She shed light on all the happy moments, all the accomplishments of the Palestinian people. And this is something that really touched millions of Palestinians, of Arabs around the world. She was able to enter the hearts of the people through the small camera lens, and until this day, she continues to be remembered for that.
Before we go, we're going to keep you on, Mehdi, to talk about other issues during the Trump administration. But how can people access Who Killed Shireen?
So it's available online at whokilledshireen.com is where you can go to watch it. We are releasing the film right now only to paid subscribers. We hope that change that in the forthcoming days. People often say to me, how could you put it behind a paywall? Journalism, a free press isn't free, sadly. We have to fund films like this. Dion came to us because a lot of other people didn't want to fund a topic like this, didn't want to fund an investigation like this. So we're proud to be able to fund such documentaries, but we also need support from our contributors, our subscribers, and the viewers. But it's an important film, and I hope as many people will watch it as possible. WhoKilledShireen.com.
We want to thank Lina, the niece of Shireen Abu Akleh, and Anton, Tony, the older brother of Shireen Abu Akleh, for joining us, from New Jersey. together, we saw the documentary last night, Who Killed Shireen? And we want to thank Diane Nissenbaum, who is the filmmaker, the correspondent on this film, formerly a correspondent with The Wall Street Journal. The founder of Zatteo on this first anniversary of Zatteo is Mehdi Hasan. We'll continue with him in a moment.
Me gusta la lima, me gusta limón, pero no me gusta tanta corrupción. Me gusta la lima, me gusta limón, pero no me gusta tanta corrupción.
I burned tobacco at the opening. Send thanks and prayers to Creator and our living bees. Then I'd sit you down with your abuelita, rewrite history so our kids could see where we came from and a new destiny. From Flint to Cali, water flowing pure and free. My Department of Peace with metal guns and the bike racks. Budget cuts to corporate kickbacks. If I was president, well, there'd still be drama. Take some village to heal our generational trauma. So shake your spine, put your hands up high. We got a different kind of party in the White House tonight. If I was president, hey, what would I do? If I was president, hey, I'd ask you if you were president, hey.
If I Was President by Las Cafeteras in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We're continuing our conversation with Mehdi Hasan, who is marking the first anniversary of his new site, Zatteo, which he formed after leaving MSNBC. Mehdi, you've closely covered the war in Gaza as well as the Trump administration. So if you could begin on Gaza.
On where we are right now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of us tried to say that Donald Trump would make things even worse. There was a big debate during the election campaign where people understandably said, it can't get any worse. And the one thing you know about U.S. politics is it can always get worse. And I think we've seen that with the Trump administration. He came in with this great fanfare. He had the fake ceasefire around the time of his inauguration. He got a bit of credit from some folks. We always knew it was never going to last. Netanyahu ended that ceasefire. They're now killing people at rates even worse in many ways than 2024. You guys began the show talking about 100 people killed in 24 hours. And the world is numb to that. You know, in October, November, December of 2023, it was a huge story. And today, people are shrugging their shoulders. We're talking about ethnic cleansing of Gaza, relocating the entire population. The Israeli government said this week that they will flatten everything that remains in Gaza. Netanyahu was quoted in cabinet saying that we don't want to die with the Palestinians. We want them to die alone, was Netanyahu's phrase to his own cabinet ministers. And of course, Donald Trump himself has signed off on all of this. We're now having a mass starvation campaign. During the Biden administration, it was bad enough saying, are we going to get 100 trucks in, 200 trucks in? Zero trucks have gone into Gaza since March the 2nd.
You talk about the depersonalizing Palestinians. In the United States, where the media manufactures consent, can you talk about the icing out of Palestinian voices? I mean, the fact that you're no longer at MSNBC, that you were forced out of MSNBC after this incredible confrontation you had, questioning you had, interview with an Israeli spokesperson, and your ongoing coverage of bringing those voices out.
So one thing I did at MSNBC, I was at MSNBC for 3.5 years. And one thing, some of my colleagues, we had Eamon Moyoudin at the premiere of the film last night, who still has a show at MSNBC, although he shares it now with three other hosts. But one thing we did, and one thing Joy Reid, who's also left the network recently, had her show cancelled.
Forced out of the network.
And Ali Velshi, who's still at the network, thankfully, another great correspondent. Something that some of us did was to try and platform Palestinian voices. One of the problems we have, as you say, is they are iced out. Americans don't hear from Palestinians or Arabs or Muslims or people with actual expertise of the region or people who have spent time in Jenin, in the occupied West Bank, in Gaza. And that is a fundamental problem. You are getting a very one-sided view of the conflict. What's ironic, Amy, is the recent Pew poll that came out showed the American public is actually for the first time more sympathetic, less sympathetic to Israel, much more critical. I think it was 52%. I can't remember the exact number, but a majority of Americans were critical of Israel or not supportive of Israel for the first time. And I looked at that number and I thought, wow, a majority of Americans, a slim majority, that's despite the media coverage in favor of Israel. Imagine if Americans actually got fair coverage of this conflict and actually heard from Palestinians. Those numbers would be even higher. And I think the real tragedy is that the media has been complicit in the Gaza genocide. I'll give you one example. Over the last few weeks, Palestinians have been starved in Gaza by the Israelis. And according to one study, not a single Sunday show in this country has mentioned it.
Mehdi, I just want to ask you what we reported also in headlines, the Reuters exclusive, U.S.-Israel discuss possible U.S.-led administration for Gaza. Sources say they spoke to five people who corroborated reports that the U.S. and Israel are discussing the U.S. potentially leading a temporary post-war administration of Gaza. Your response.
Kill me now is my response. Kill me now. Or do we live in an episode of Idiocracy? The American government sat around, forget Donald Trump, man's an idiot, ignoramus, couldn't find Gaza on a map. But people in his administration, qualified people, sat around the table and said, what should we do about Gaza, the biggest problem in the world today, geopolitical issue? Let's do what we did in Iraq. Right. The Iraq, for those people who are watching who are not old enough to remember 2003, 2004, 2005, I've interviewed Paul Bremer. The Bush administration sent a viceroy, sent Paul Bremer to run the country with a bunch of kids. Some of them were out. Some of them had only. Oh, there was one guy who went out to the Greens, and I famously remember, who had only run an ice cream truck in college. They sent a bunch of children and Paul Bremer to run Iraq like a colonial project. It was an absolute disaster. It increased sectarian tensions. It increased violence. It divided the country. It fomented more violent resistance. The idea that the people of Gaza, who have resisted Israeli occupation for decades, are now going to say, well, we only had an issue with Israeli occupation. We're fine with a U.S. occupation. This is absurd. Some of us warned since October the 7th that if you really care about stopping Hamas, why are you creating the conditions for Hamas 2.0? And this is going to be Hamas 3.0, Hamas on steroids, if you create a situation where the American government, American military is on the ground in Gaza trying to control the population.
I mean, don't we have an idea? What did Trump tweet out that in... I mean, the video, the 30-second video of
with a gold statue
Elon
of Trump
Musk, a gold statue of Trump, and then Trump and Netanyahu on the beach.
He loves his AI videos of himself. It's an insane video. We all just moved on for it because there's so much happening in the news, but I'm glad you reminded that. Look, he's been consistently clear on one thing: ethnic cleansing, relocation of Palestinians, creating Gaza the Riviera. He's obsessed with the beachfront property because he's a real estate guy slash war criminal endorser.
A federal appeals court on Wednesday ordered the Trump administration to transfer the abducted Tufts Fulbright Scholar international student Rumeysa Ozturk from Louisiana back to Vermont, where her case could be heard. You just interviewed the Massachusetts Congresswoman Brianna Presley about her treatment.
Horrific treatment. We're not just detaining foreign students in this country for speech crimes, Amy. We're torturing them, too. If you listen to what happened to Badr Khansouri, who's a Georgetown student who was also detained, the torture that he's gone through, the abuse, the sleeping on the floor, the denial of clean underwear. And now Rumeysa Ozturk, Ayanna Pressley, Congresswoman, told me that when she went to see her, she was denied health care. She suffered severe asthma attacks. She had her hijab removed without consent. I mean, we are Louisiana. That detention center in Louisiana is famous for human rights crimes. So why are people being sent from Vermont and Massachusetts and New York, Mahmoud Khalil, to Louisiana? That in itself is a question we should ask ourselves. We're torturing people again.
So, Mehdi, in that same interview, Ayanna Pressley said to you, this is not about the Trump administration. This is not about weathering the next 4 years. I believe this will dictate the next 100. We have 30 seconds. Your response to that?
I think she's right in many ways. I think we are in that historical period. Now, this is not just about Trump. You look at the global rise of fascism and authoritarianism. You look at what's happening with Narendra Modi in India and Orban in Hungary, Putin in Russia and Ukraine, Middle East autocrats. We are in that place where a democracy, the progress we made over the last 80 years, 100 years, is at stake, very much so.
And a judge just stopped immigrants from being sent to Libya on a U.S. military jet. And over 80 students were just arrested at Columbia. And Rubio said he'd pull international visas of students who were protesting. Your final thoughts in 5 seconds.
Fascism isn't coming, Amy. It's here.
Mehdi Hasan, the editor-in-chief of the media website Zateo, which is celebrating its one-year anniversary this week. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!